All right, we are in the final week of our summer series that we are calling Red Letter Summer. And the Red Letter Summer is referring to the red letters in modern printings of the Bible, where the words of Jesus are put into red letters. So each week we've just looked at some other words that Jesus said. Now, if you remember, at the end of last week's service, I gave a challenge or an encouragement, depending on how you received it. I said, we're going to be in the 10th chapter of Mark. If you read the entire 10th chapter this week, try to figure out which part of Mark chapter 10 I'm going to be preaching out of. And after you've read it and you make your guess, send me an email or a text, and you might just get a prize. Well, a couple people responded. Way to go. Always got to celebrate people reading their Bibles. And actually, the first person to respond actually got it right. This person apparently knows me well. And I said I might give a prize. So Lowell Graves, well done. Here we go. That is for you, sir. We will reward that kind of behavior, Lowell Graves. We are in the 10th chapter of Mark, and the passage that we are looking at in the 10th chapter of Mark is actually verses 13 to 16, and this is what it says. People were bringing little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them, but the disciples rebuked them. If this was one of those audience participation things, this is the part where sometimes you cheer the characters or you boo the characters. This would be the boo moment, you know? But the disciples rebuked them. Boo. When Jesus saw this, he was indignant. Whew, okay. Now, here's the thing. I remember having this story read to me when I was a child in church, and there'd be pictures in Sunday school. And Jesus is looking a lot like a surfer. You remember those pictures, kind of the woe dude Jesus. And he's sitting there, and the children, everybody's just standing around like. But it says here Jesus was indignant. And so oftentimes when I'd hear this read when I was a child, it's like, let the little children come to me. And do not hinder them. No, he's indignant. I don't know what your indignant voice sounds like. Jesus is indignant. He's talking to the disciples that just rebuked parents for bringing children to him. He goes, let the little children come to me. Do not hinder them. For the kingdom of God belongs to these. Truly, I tell you, anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter it. And he took the children in his arms, placed his hands on them, and blessed them. So why this passage this morning? Truth be told, I chose this passage for this morning because it's the Sunday before kids' camp. You know, and so I thought, oh, yeah, this would be the perfect passage. Do not hinder them, referring to these children. Do not hinder the little ones from coming to Jesus. So if you're taking notes, this is your fill in the blank. Do not hinder them. Here's the problem. Do we want to be a church where children and their families are welcomed here and we're not hindering them? Absolutely. As followers of Jesus, we should be getting rid of the barriers that keep little ones from coming. Yes, but sometimes we are a little premature in our conclusions about what Jesus is talking about in the 10th chapter. Should we be people that invite children to come be with Jesus? Yes. But if we conclude that this is really all that Jesus is talking about here, we've missed the bigger picture. We cannot be too premature in our conclusions about what Jesus is saying here. We have to remember that when Jesus says these red letters, it's part of the 10th chapter of Mark. And the 10th chapter of Mark is a chapter of contrasts. If you read the chapter this week, you are well aware of that. You've got basically two groups of people in the 10th chapter. You've got on one side Pharisees, disciples, and a rich young man. On the other side, you've got women, children, and a blind beggar. On the one hand, you have the important people, the deserving group. On the other hand, you've got the undeserving, insignificant group of people. In about the 4th or 5th century B.C., we find evidence that a prayer was becoming more common. And this is the prayer. Blessed art thou, O God, for not making me a Gentile, slave, or woman. You can guess who's praying this prayer. That would be Jewish men. And you can very easily add children into this prayer. Blessed art thou, O God, for not making me a Gentile, slave, a woman, and thank God I'm not a kid anymore. Here's the thing. I mean, we can kind of snicker at this prayer or cringe at this prayer, but here's the point. This is the prayer that's being prayed by many people within that cultural setting. So when Jesus says these words, he's saying it to people that pray those kinds of prayers. The culture that Jesus was teaching in during his 3 years of public ministry would have an attitude very much like this. And as you watch Jesus's ministry, what you'll discover that Jesus disrupts this cultural attitude regularly. In fact, if you just look in the 10th chapter, the deserving people, the Pharisees, the disciples, the rich young man, to those people, he challenges them and he rebukes them. And with the women, the children, and the blind beggar, he elevates them. He lifts them up. And Jesus is doing this all the time in his ministry. He challenges the cultural attitudes of the people that divide into the haves and the have-nots. Jesus is constantly chopping these folks down to size while lifting up the others. Take a look at this. Starts painting and painting and painting. You go, what is he even making? And then he flips it upside down. You go, oh, it's Jesus. Jesus's ministry has been described by some as a ministry where he is proclaiming a kingdom that is an upside down kingdom. An upside down kingdom. Culturally, things were set up in kind of a tiered system. These people are important, and you work your way all down to, thank God I'm not a Gentile, a woman, a slave, a child. And Jesus takes this system and he goes, it's upside down. Jesus flips things upside down over and over and over again. Michael Wilkins writes this: the community of disciples, talking about the church, the community of disciples sees in Jesus' actions a picture of how it must overcome the irritation of those first disciples and devote itself to the spiritual and physical care not only of children, but of all those who are helpless, hurting, and marginalized. Upside down. It's not how we tend to operate. And we like to look down at the disciples. We boo them for good reason until we realize how very much like those first disciples we can be from time to time. You know, I read this passage, and I see the disciples rebuking parents bringing their children to Jesus. And I think, you morons. I go, how did you miss this, you guys? You've been with Jesus at this point in the narrative roughly 3 years. They've been with Jesus for 3 years, and then when the little ones are being brought to Jesus, they miss it. How did the disciples miss what Jesus was doing? How did they miss at this point that Jesus was about an upside-down kingdom? Some people argue that what the disciples are doing in this moment is protecting Jesus. Jesus is a busy guy with important things to do, and he can't just continue to be interrupted by people over and over again. Some people argue that they are protecting Jesus. Unfortunately, we slip into this mode from time to time when we conclude that our primary job as the church is to protect the church. We become the gatekeepers. These people, yes, you people, well, kind of, when you get your act together. We'd love to have you with us as soon as you fix XYZ. Sometimes we slip into that disciple gatekeeper mode and think that our job is to protect the church. Other people argue, and I tend to agree with this argument more, that what the disciples are doing here is they're protecting, but they're not protecting Jesus as much as they're protecting their access to Jesus. Oh, yes, we'd love for people to be healed by Jesus as long as it doesn't get in the way of our time with Jesus. Oh, yes, bring the little children as long as they're not getting in the way of my time with Jesus, because I am one of the chosen 12 after all. Oh, we slip into this mode all the time. Yes, let the little children come to me. Let the little children come to the church. Let the little children come with their families. We're not going to hinder them. We want this to happen as long as the other people, these newer people, don't get in the way of the way I like to do things in my church. Oh, we want to be an open, receiving place as long as it doesn't get in the way of my agenda. I would love to just be preaching at you this morning on this point, except for I realize I should just put a big fat mirror in front of myself and go, I'd go there. Yes, we want this to be a welcoming place as long as you people don't screw up my worship. Sometimes we are like the disciples, aren't we? We want to say, let the little children come until it messes with my stuff. The children are coming, and the disciples are getting frustrated, and they rebuke them. And had Jesus not stepped in, those children would not have ultimately been blessed by Jesus. Fortunately, Jesus steps in. When we follow the example of those early disciples, everyone loses. When we follow the example of the early disciples and we think that our job is to screen people or it's to, celebrate my agenda. When we follow their example, everyone loses. The other people lose out. And here's the thing. So do we. We lose out when we're following the example of those 12 disciples in the 10th chapter. We lose out. People were bringing little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them. But the disciples rebuked them. When Jesus saw this, he was indignant. He said to them, "Let the little children come to me, and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of God belongs to such as these. Truly I tell you," listen to this, "truly I tell you, anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter it. Truly I tell you, anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter it." We need to be receiving the kingdom like a child. Okay. Over the years, I've heard this passage preached on or taught up on, and more times than not, the teaching that comes out of this passage is we need to be more like children, and we end up over romanticizing children. People will point out, "Oh, we need to be like children, that they have humility and transparency and a willingness to trust." And all of those are our attitudes or qualities that the follower of Jesus should seek to have. But let's not forget, children are also demanding, selfish, stubborn, and immature. Jesus isn't drawing attention to children because he wants his followers to be childish. He's drawing attention to their littleness. He's pointing out their littleness. We need to be a people that are embracing our littleness. Remember, it's part of the 10th chapter, and you've got the haves and the have-nots. He's chosen children in this moment to show another group of in the have-nots, the little people. David Garland, there's a typo in here, I apologize, but he writes this: "The disciples need to learn not only to minister to the little ones, but also to adopt the attitude of littleness. The little ones are easily pushed aside because they are weak. But God works most powerfully in weakness. When one is appropriately little, like a child, or poor in spirit, one is more open to receiving the reign of God. Children are also more open to receiving gifts than adults. Adults want to earn what they get. Adults want to earn what they get, as the next scene with the rich man reveals." We need to be embracing our littleness. These red letters, when Jesus is saying, "Unless I become like a child," it is calling me and calling us to more than simply going, "Yes, we will be a church that invites children," although we want to be a church that invites children. But it's calling us to something far deeper than that. Beyond, "Hey, let's be a church that's welcoming to children and families." It's choosing me. It's causing me and causing you to choose a side. The 10th chapter has two sides. The one side is a side of self-reliance. The other side is a side of total dependence. The 10th chapter makes me choose a side. Am I going to side with the, "Oh, I'm going to be on the self-reliant side"? Or am I going to go, "I'm going to embrace my littleness. The fact that I am ridiculously undeserving." When I embrace my littleness, something amazing happens. Daryl Bach writes, "What is commended in children is their inherent dependence, for they bring nothing but themselves to the feet of Jesus." Oh, again, my choice: self-reliance, self-dependence, total dependence and littleness. When I choose this side, I end up distancing myself from Jesus. Fortunately, he's relentless. When I choose this side, I open myself up to receive grace. The grace that God is extending to me is not dependent upon my actions. He continues to extend grace. When I embrace my littleness, I open myself up to receive grace. Here's your oxymoron for the morning. In the 10th chapter, it said they got two basic groups. This group over here, the Pharisees, disciples, rich young man, are the type of people that would say something along these lines, I deserve God's grace. There's your oxymoron for the morning. When you think, I deserve God's grace in this moment, you don't really understand grace. As I was studying this last week on this passage, I came across an author I'd never read before. His name is Gary Galbraith. And what he had to say about grace, I found wonderful. If you're taking notes, it's a longer quote. I put the parts where you fill in the blank in a different color. But listen to what Galbraith has to say about grace. God's grace is one thing that changes everything. Grace is God's undeserved favor. Imagine that. A God who desires to favor you, love you, bless you, and do for you what you cannot do for yourself. A God who is not mad at you, but mad about you. It's a pathway to greater spiritual enlightenment that is based upon God's goodness, not yours. You begin to work from God's acceptance and not for God's acceptance. This understanding will become a paradigm shift that will revolutionize your life. This understanding of grace will cause you to fall greater in love with God, which is why he created you in the first place. The love relationship will be the catalyst for you to become a better person and more like God himself. You'll begin to realize that God is for you and has your best interest at heart. God's grace is a gift. You can't earn it. You can't deserve it. You can only receive it in humility. Unwrap it, enjoy it, and respond to it. When you see life through the eyes of God's grace, it will change the way you view God, yourself, and others. It will cause you to fall greater in love with God. For grace is not just a topic or an idea, but a person, and his name is Jesus. And he took the children in his arms, placed his hands on them, and blessed them. What does it look like to be blessed by Jesus? Now, I'm not trying to limit God, but I doubt that Jesus is going to show up in the sanctuary and physically pick you up and put you on his physical lap. He can. Like I said, I'm not trying to limit God here. But I don't think that's how it's going to play out for each and every one of us this morning. But Jesus is in the business of blessing, of loving, of extending grace. So how do we receive his blessing? Look at his red letters again. When we embrace our littleness, when we embrace our total dependence, when we embrace our unworthiness, we open ourselves up to receiving his grace, his undeserved favor, and in that moment, blessed. When we, with courage and humility, partner with Jesus in proclaiming an upside-down kingdom, a kingdom where the physical and spiritual care of the helpless, the hurting, and the marginalized is being physically done in that moment, blessed. When we're intentional about opening the doors for the undeserving, the little ones. Blessed. Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them. For the kingdom of God belongs to such as these undeserving, unimportant, flawed, hurting people. Kingdom of God belongs to such as these. Truly, I tell you, anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God like a little child, like one that is totally dependent, like one that is little, will never enter it. And he took the children in his arms, placed his hands on them, and blessed them. Would you pray with me, please? Mm-hmm.